Hi folks, Barry here, just popping into your ears before you listen to this week's episode, which as you will see from the title and as we explain at the start of the show is our third foot. It's our bonus episode for this month due to a guest cancellation and Ben being away on holidays. We've decided to stick our regular monthly bonus episode out on a Monday, so you have it for your Monday morning dose of Worst Foot Forward, and we'll be back with a full episode next week, which should be, all being well with our recording schedule this week, World's Worst Astronomer. So hopefully the stargazers among you will be excited about that one. Also, Ben's microphone had a little bit of a moment while we were setting up to record this episode, so the sound quality on his end of the recording isn't as good as we'd like it, but it's still pretty good. I think you'll still enjoy this week's episode as we talk about holidays. Ben should be jetting back from his as this goes out. As we mentioned at the end of this episode as well, our 250th proper episode is but a few weeks away. And we come to you, Worst Foot Forward listeners, our community, to share your favourite stories of failure, mishaps, facts, human misery, animal cruelty. Let's be honest, we know what the brand of the podcast is. Funny facts and stories and trivia that you can email to us or send us a little no more than 30-second audio clip of you outlining to us, and we'll read around the topic and build our 250th episode on all your favourite facts and stories that you share with us. We've already had a couple of people send things through to us. Keep them coming. We want as many of you involved as possible. It'd be lovely to shout out as many names as we can as we celebrate quite a significant milestone. Get in touch on worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. That's worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're feeling generous and you fancy helping us out this month, I'm not going to plug the Patreon. You know where that is, patreon.com/worstfootforward. You can go check it out yourselves. There's lots of lovely things on there, bonuses you can get, bonus content you can get if you help chuck us a few quid. But instead, we haven't done a call out for this in a while. Write us a nice review if you get the chance. If you're on iTunes or wherever you listen to us and they have a review system, rate us 5 stars, write a couple of nice words about us. It helps keep people's eyes on the podcast prize. Every time one of those pops up and we get a little alert, and we see what someone has said about the show, it really is it's a lovely thing for us to see, and it's a lovely thing for other people to see, who are, you know, you get those people who send out tweets going, they're slightly praising themselves, I've just taken up running, I need a new podcast to accompany me on my runs, what should I be listening to? Well, if you're running 30 minutes to an hour or something, which is a pretty good dose of exercise, why not listen to our episodes? They're a good length for that sort of thing. So yeah, anything nice you can say about the podcast, we greatly appreciate. And as ever, you can get in touch with us on Twitter on @worstfoot, or Ben's on @BenVandeveld, and I'm @BazMaxStay. Settle back in your sun loungers and enjoy our monthly bonus episode this month, all about holidays.
Friends, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vandeveld, and this week you join us on our special extra episode, The Third Foot, where myself and my co-host Barry dig down into a previous winner of the show or interesting topic that we thought we should talk about some more. Except this week, that's not what we're doing, because you may have noticed that this episode has come out on a Monday when our normal episodes do. I will level with you the reason for that is twofold. One, I am currently on holiday. It is my first holiday abroad in 5 years, my first ever with my children. And we had a guest cancel on us a few days ago, and this was going to be this episode here. And so instead, we have moved the third foot to take the place of the episode that would be here. So it's less of a third foot and more of a false second foot.
Ben is recording this live from a sun lounger by a pool somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, if you just hear me occasionally slurping from a hollowed out coconut, then that is just me enjoying a drink made from the blood of my enemies.
So rather appropriately, we've decided to do a third foot episode all about holidays.
Yeah, we thought, because we've talked about world's worst tourist destinations, we are yet to do world's worst hotel, but we thought a little special all about holidays would be a good idea. And I'm going to take us through the airport, and then Barry is going to take us abroad.
On holiday, yeah.
Yeah. First of all, I looked at ridiculous things that people have tried to smuggle through airport security. We have an actual cannonball, bearing in mind that weaponry is obviously illegal on aeroplanes, but one flyer in Fort Lauderdale decided that he wanted to take home an actual cannonball that he had found whilst diving underwater and he'd found near a shipwreck. Now, it's about the size of my head. So already he's surely over the luggage limit on there.
Well, did he try carry it on in hand luggage? I mean, they don't tend to weigh your hand luggage.
Oh, good point. So, yeah, so he's clearly tried to get around the issue there. Yeah. Good point.
You know what he should have done?
What should he have done?
Should have fired it from a cannon from Fort Lauderdale to his destination.
Yes. And then raced it.
Yeah.
And he could have taken part. What's that experiment? If you're traveling at the speed of light and you're firing a bullet, how fast does the bullet go?
Yeah.
So I quite enjoyed that. Another one that I found, and it's obviously animal smuggling, horrible, 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 horrible. But I found one picture of someone who was smuggling 51 different tropical fish, and they were wearing like an apron with 51 little pockets in it. Each individual fish was in a little bag in a pocket.
Sorry. That's wrong on two levels, because one, they're trying to bring live animals through, and two, there's all those bags of liquid, which are obviously a major concern for like airport security nowadays as well. They'd have to make sure all the fish were in less than 100 mils of liquid.
Yeah. And it's like just going, excuse me, could you lie on your side, please?
Yeah.
And then the worst example of this, and again, it's horrible maltreatment of animals, but also the animals are fish, so who gives a shit? It was a guy who tried to smuggle 240 fish in a briefcase. They were in tiny little plastic bags. It's like the guy just had a bumper day at the fun fair. It sounds like a Monty Python sketch, but yeah. It's a real thing. My favourite one, just for the image, was a guy who was trying to smuggle iPhones out. I think this was either out of or into Hong Kong, but I may be misremembering. But he tried to smuggle 94 iPhones by taping them all to himself. And he sort of looked like someone had ordered a Cyberman from Wish.com because he was part man, part iPhone.
He says the word sorry. All of them mishear him and they think he said Siri. And 94 voices go, yes.
Next, I looked at duty free. The policy may have changed here, but at Abuja Airport in Nigeria, they had a very particular policy to deal with people buying things in duty-free. Obviously, if you bring duty-free items onto a plane, then sometimes they might ask for proof that you bought it in duty-free. And how would you provide that proof, Barry?
A receipt?
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. There's the name of the duty-free store. There's the price corresponding with, frankly, probably the booze or fags or perfume that I bought. Not so at Abuja Airport, where they insisted upon a carrier bag from the duty-free. Even though passengers showed them a receipt, that wasn't good enough. And so inspectors at the gate wouldn't let them onto the plane with their duty-free booze. So there's a couple of issues here. Firstly, there was a bit of a jobs for the boys issue where to try and create more jobs, there was an additional bag search at the gate, even though that's not necessary because they've been through airport security.
Oh, right.
And secondly, they were just being extraordinarily officious and going, unless you have a bag from duty-free, you will not get on the plane. What do you think happened? I'll tell you what happened. People started buying cheap booze outside of the airport, putting it in duty-free bags, and then taking that on the aeroplane instead, thus negating the point of duty-free. Which is, I'm sure you can agree, very, very silly indeed.
Yeah.
Last of all, I wanted to tell you about some stupid airports. So, first of all, we have Juancho E. Irasquin Airport, which is on the island of Saba in the Caribbean. It is a Dutch-owned island because of empire. Yeah. This is recognised as the shortest commercial runway in the world. It is just under a quarter of a mile long. And to give you an idea of how long that is slightly longer than a typical aircraft carrier. There are only two flights a day to the nearby islands of St. Eustatius and St. Martin, which are only 15 minutes away. They can only have a certain size of aeroplane landing on it. Otherwise, it won't be able to slow down and it'll just fall into the Caribbean Sea.
Right.
And so I quite enjoyed that. The other The other very short one is Papa Westray Airport, which is north of Kirkwall Airport and the Orkney Islands. It is one of two airports that are joined by the shortest scheduled flight in the world. It is part of Loganair's inter-island service, and it goes from Papa Westray to Westray Airport. How long do you think that the flight time is between these two airports?
2 minutes.
Correct. That is including taxiing.
No.
Taxi, speed up, and then back down again. They could do it just as well with a catapult.
Outstanding.
Just a couple more airports to tell you about. I love this. This is at the Savannah Hilton Head International Airport in America. If you are taxiing there on your plane, you might look out the window and look on the tarmac of runway 10 and go, what are those two square markers there? They look an awful lot like gravestones. And that's because they are. Because the previous owners of the land, Catherine and Richard Dotson, used the land that the airport now sits on as a cemetery. They died in the late 1880s and were buried in that cemetery. And then, as World War II approached, the military decided to convert the cemetery into an airport for training purposes, moved all of the bodies into another cemetery. However, to honour the families, they left the grave markers of Catherine and Richard behind, which on one side is quite touching and thoughtful of the US military. On the other side, the last thing I want to see when I'm taxiing to go on holiday is a pair of gravestones while I wonder, why are they there? Who accidentally popped the emergency exit door for a bit of fresh air?
Yeah, it doesn't exactly inspire confidence.
Not at all. But last of all, I want to tell you about Dong Myung Airport in Bangkok. What do you think is found on the grass that separates the runways of this airport that makes it unique?
Oh, do they graze them with sheep or cows or something?
Nope, sillier than that.
Swimming pools, open air swimming pools.
Getting closer.
Oh, right. Children's playgrounds.
No.
Kite flying schools.
That would be immense. No, a golf course. An 18-hole golf course. When you tee off there, you are often just 20 yards away from passenger jets taking off and landing. In order to get there, you have to pass your clubs through an explosives detector, just in case. And in the words of one keen golfer, one bad shot and you could slice right into the path of an airplane. It's probably the only course in the world where you could be arrested for being a bad golfer.
But yeah, but also, if you're waving your driver around, you're going to look an awful lot like one of those air traffic controllers paddling a plane into land.
God, yeah. I cannot find why or how this exists. So if any other listeners like know about this or perhaps have flown into this airport and have seen it, please do let us know. But I discovered it and was astonished by the recklessness of it. It's kind of glorious, isn't it?
I mean, I'm a keen golfer. Not sure that I would be teeing it up there in the 20 yards from a passenger jet.
Just to let you know that the golf course on TripAdvisor has 4 5-star reviews.
4.
Of course.
Appropriately enough, yeah. Well, now we're on holiday, Ben, I've got words of caution for you. Mm-hmm. Mind you don't afflict yourself with holiday heart syndrome.
Ooh, what's that?
Well, it's an irregular heartbeat pattern, which was coined in 1978. The abnormal heart rhythms, sometimes following excessive alcohol consumption, usually temporary. And it's basically associated with binge drinking, common during the holiday season. So there's a spike in people feeling irregular heartbeats and so on when they go on holidays or during the festive season. Just take it easy with the pina coladas while you're out there. Do you remember the story of Jordan Aksani? He was a Canadian chap who had booked a 3-week round-the-world trip with his girlfriend Elizabeth Gallagher, and then they broke up and he had purchased a non-refundable holiday with Elizabeth Gallagher, and so he didn't want the ticket to go to waste. And so he went viral trying to find a replacement Elizabeth Gallagher to go on this trip with him.
This feels very I'm Dave Gorman.
Yeah, it does very much, doesn't it? PR experts say it is the most viral human interest story on record. It received 4 billion media impressions globally. Over 1,200 Elizabeth Gallaghers came forward. The traveller had to have a Canadian passport, which narrowed it down to about 40. And then he ended up having what he said was an amazing trip with the Elizabeth Gallagher he picked, a student, although they didn't fall in love or anything. He said the public wanted it to be much more salacious than it really was. And because they didn't fall in love, in a way, and after the media frenzy, Aksani said the aftermath became a crazy exercise in what you do when you let the world down. He had a total breakdown and almost killed myself. I had so much guilt about how much this hurt my previous partner and her family. I loved her very much. It was one of those stories that kind of took off in a way that he didn't predict and didn't want. He felt very guilty at the humiliation he heaped on his former partner. They're now apparently on good terms again. There's a Hollywood film apparently documenting the story in the works. He's writing a book about it. He is a public speaker. He's given a TED talk about it. And he's set up a mental health charity, the Bound Foundation, and works with several mental health practices in Canada as well. He said, going viral helped me look at how I was living my life. To me, the story wasn't about traveling the world with a stranger, but how to reconcile yourself with making such a huge error in judgment. Now I'm using the story to do something good.
Aww.
Then I was thinking about one of the, you know, you think of the great seaside resorts in Britain that people would holiday in the olden days. And I wanted to read about Bognor Regis.
Where I am gigging at the end of this month.
Are you really?
Mm-hmm.
How do we describe Bognor Regis to people who haven't been here?
I mean, do you know what? I've never been to Bognor Regis before. I've never been to Blackpool, which was recently on Twitter described by by Jeff Vandermeer, who was one of the great alternative fantasy writers of the past 25 years, as basically a hellmouth.
Yeah.
A neon hellmouth.
Chilly seaside, pebbled beach sort of resorts around Britain. They're the sort of places we're thinking of, you know, with amusement piers. But Bognor Regis is in West Sussex in the South Coast. I didn't realise Bognor Regis was basically created as a seaside resort. There was a chap called Richard Hoffman. So Richard Hoffman, he was a property developer, a politician. He made a lot of money out of the East India Company. He was a hatter originally. His nickname was Hotham the Hatter. And he found the climate on the South Coast was very good for the constitution, and indeed similar resorts in Brighton and Weymouth had grown up as the wealthy and the aristocratic and members of the royal family left London and their country houses to come to the seaside for the summer. So Hoffman, he himself decided he would like a house down on the coast. So he bought a plot of land near the sea, which he called Bognor Lodge. And it was near a little village, Bognor, which at the time was just literally a tiny little fishing village and renowned for smuggling as well. And Hoffman saw the opportunity, put his property developer's hat on, and he thought, I could set up a resort here to rival Brighton and Weymouth, which had grown up sort of naturally. And he set about buying as much land in the area as he could until he owned around 1,600 acres of the land around Bognor, and began building vast numbers of terrace houses around what was, like I say, a tiny fishing village, with the express goal of attracting the aristocratic and the wealthy to come and stay there. His prize, his dream being that eventually King George would come and stay there. The king preferred to stay in Weymouth. The Prince of Wales tended to stay in Brighton. And so he was going to try and make Bognor the new hotspot for them all to visit. He even tried renaming it Hothamton in his own honour, but the locals didn't exactly let that catch on. Ultimately, he failed. He didn't manage to get the top tier A-listers to come to Bognor. Minor members of the royal family would stay there in the new Dome House, which was the big posh manor that he built, overlooking his own house. But it did continue to grow and grow. The railway came there in 1864 and it became a popular seaside destination. It was still known as Bognor at the time, and the Regis is to do with of the king. And it got that subtitle in the 20s. George V became ill. He had lung surgery in the late 1920s. Buckingham Palace issued a statement in early 1929 saying, it has been realised by the King's medical advisers that prior to the establishment of convalescence, there would arrive a time when sea air would be necessary in order to secure the continuation of His Majesty's progress. With the knowledge, a careful search was made for a residence not only suitable in itself, but possessing the necessary attributes of close proximity to the sea, southern exposure, protection from the wind, privacy, and reasonable access to and from London. So they set about finding a residence that they could send the king to convalesce, and they picked Craig Vile House in Bognor, placed at the king's disposal by its owner, Sir Arthur de Crowe, who was a wealthy businessman. And as a result, the king was asked to give it the suffix Regis. Just before he went, to say, you know, you're going to be staying in Bognor Regis for a while, it's going to be a royal residence as such, so let's call the place Bognor of the king. So this petition was presented to the king's private secretary by various representatives of Bognor. He delivered it to the king. King George supposedly replied, "Oh, bugger Bognor."
Nah, oh, so that's where that comes from.
Yeah, Lord Stamfordham, who was the private secretary, went back to the petitioners and didn't tell them he'd said that. He simply said, "The king has been graciously pleased to grant your request." There's a different story, is that the king was about to die, basically, and he was told, "Don't worry, you'll soon recover well enough to visit Bognor," and he was said to have said bugger Bognor. That story is probably less likely to be true than the original, the one I previously mentioned. What is certain is that the king didn't really like Bognor, though. And Bognor is also the site of one of the Butlin's holiday camps. Billy Butlin, who's the founder of these, he was a Sir... Billy Butlin makes him sound much more sort of East End Del Boy type. He is Sir William Haggett Edmund Colburn Butler, MBE. A South African-born British entrepreneur. He was the guy who founded these holiday camps. He first appeared in Bognor with his recreation shelter, popular entertainment venue. It had one-armed bandits and dodgem cars. And then he set up a Butlin Zoo in the early 30s there, containing bears and hyenas and pelicans and kangaroos and so on.
Oh my.
Yeah. And then within 3 years, 1936, he opened his first holiday camp in Skegness. And then eventually 1958, the Bognor Regis Town Council announced that they had reached an agreement with him to build a holiday camp there as well. That Butlin's is still open to this day. It opened in 1960. And the reason Butlin's came up with these ideas of holiday camps is that he basically had seen a lot of people on seaside holidays where they would stay in, you know, B&Bs or people's houses, landladies' houses. And sometimes these landladies would literally shove families out of the house between meals. They would just be staying there for bed and board.
That's such a beautiful picture of ye olde England, of really officious landladies feeding you over crisp bacon and then shoving you out onto the street.
Absolutely. So he thought there must be a way of having a holiday accommodation that allows people to have entertainment between meals, allows them to stay on site. They're not just being shoved out into the street by people saying, "Come back when it's dinner time." And so he opened, as I say, this first Butlin's holiday camp in Skegness in 1936 at Easter time. It was officially opened by Amy Johnson, the first woman to fly solo from England to Australia. And they placed an advert costing £500, which is £28,000 in
modern
money. Yeah. In the Daily Express, announcing it was open and inviting the public to book for a week's holiday. And the advertisement said it was going to have 3 meals a day, free entertainment for a week's full board, costing anything from 35 shillings to £3. £3, £167 today. So pretty affordable at the lower end of it, for given, you know, holidays were at the time quite a luxury. This was opening it up to the masses in a way. And when it opened, Butlin realised that the guests weren't really engaged in the way he'd hoped. They were sort of keeping to themselves, they were a bit bored. And so he asked a guy called Norman Bradford to start entertaining the guests with icebreakers and jokes. Norman Bradford had been employed at the holiday camp as an engineer, but he clearly had a bit of personality and a bit of spark to him. And Billy Butlin got him to do these jokes. And by the end of the night, apparently, his show was like a hit. The people were just like, "Who is this guy? He's hilarious. He's entertaining." He was the first red coat. The entertainers at Butlin's wear these red blazers and they sing and dance and tell jokes and put on shows, and they help keep the games for children going, and they help organise activities. And that was, he was the very first red coat. Entertainment was put at the heart of the Buttons experience. And it was literally that night Billy Button decided he had to hire more people to do the same job as Bradford. The other thing I like about Button is that the camps were requisitioned by the War Office during World War II to use as training camps. They wanted more camps, so they asked Butlin to build them for them, and he agreed on the condition that he could purchase them back from the War Office after the war at a cut price to reopen as holiday camps. So that happened. Filey and then Plilhelly and Ayr all opened after the war as Butlin's holiday camps, having been built by him for the War Office to help the war effort.
I mean, like, listen, I don't want to get too much into rose-tinted World War II nostalgia, but when you tell me things like that, it's hard not to get a little bit swept up in the whole Dad's Army narrative.
It gets even better. He was recruited by the Ministry of Supply to try and examine the reason for low morale among workers in Britain's munitions factories. And so he visited the Royal Ordnance Factory in Chorley, which had camouflaged huts and barbed wire fences around the area where the workers were living. And he said, well, obviously it just makes them feel like they're interns in prisoner of war camps. Mm-hmm. So he said, we need to redesign the living quarters. Then he was appointed Director General of Hostels, where he devised activities and systems to help boost people's morale. So with this role, he brought in games and entertainment, like in his holiday camps, like whist drives, amateur dramatics, theatrical productions, cinemas. And he encouraged workers in these munitions factories to also take their holiday entitlement at home. And he organised travelling fairs to visit various towns where workers were holidaying during their holiday weeks. And then during the war, during the Allied advance through Europe after the Normandy landings, General Montgomery asked him to set up leave centres for the 21st Army Group, and he set up the 21 Club in Brussels, and that concept spread throughout Europe as well, where people would move off the front lines and take a break from immediate frontline activity, and he would provide entertainment and relaxation for servicemen and women. And so in 1944, he was awarded his MBE for his wartime service. Clearly a brilliant businessman. Way to help the war effort as well.
I did one of my favourite ever gigs at a Butlins.
Really?
but Butlins Minehead gets taken over by Madness once a year, and they programme loads of different stages there. And I got to play to 800 skinheads, but the fun kind.
Amazing.
And because it was all Madness fans in their 50s and 60s, I did the gig. We had a lovely old time. And then we all went to watch Madness in the evening. And it's just surrounded by people who are trying to skank, but their knees and ankles won't let them.
Finally, I read about some holidays, as in holidays we commemorate, like Valentine's Day or Halloween or Christmas. Some of the more off-the-beaten-track ones. January the 12th is Kiss a Ginger Day, started by a guy called Derek Fogey as a positive celebration of people with red hair.
Great. A lot of cats have a bad day on January the 12th.
Yeah, well, he posted on social media, redheads often encounter some sort of bullying and prejudice and pejorative remarks. And so it took off, and it's a holiday that's celebrated online throughout the world. March the 14th, Steak and Blowjob Day. It's a popular Twitter one. It was invented, apparently, in 2002 by a radio DJ called Tom Birdsey. He suggests that basically Valentine's Day is a girly day for women, and that chocolates and flowers and all of the things that are associated with Valentine's Day aren't the sort of thing that real men like. And so a month later, February 14th is obviously Valentine's Day, March 14th, men want steak and blowjobs, please.
Okay, well, listen, in that case, I understand him doing that, but he needs to rename St. Valentine's Day as Chamomile Tea and Cunnilingus Day.
Ben, April 14th, Cake and Cunnilingus Day.
There we go.
This was set up in 2006 by an erotica blog for women called Miss Naughty's Porn for Women in a retaliation to Steak and Blowjob Day.
In retaliation, so quite a kinky S&M response.
Yeah, well, they said basically Steak and Blowjob Day is based on a false premise that Valentine's Day is all about women and men need a special day of their own. So Cake and Cunnilingus Day is then providing the balance to the apps.
We have a full tasting menu of food and sex acts.
Yeah, I like December the 8th.
Go on.
Pretend to be a time traveller day.
So that's literally running up to people in the street going, what year is this?
Literally, yes. You should spend the day role-playing the part of a time traveller. You can do it by misusing technology, using slang the wrong way, dress up as your favourite time traveller from books, TV or movies, or watch your favourite TV programmes and movies that include time travel like Bill and Ted or Back to the Future and so on, and post about it using the hashtag pretend to be a time traveller day on social media. Apparently the holiday was created in 2007 by a post on the Koala Wallop online community, or will be created in 2037 by a post on the Koala Wallop online community.
Lovely.
And my favourite holidays are those created by a chap called Thomas Roy, who's an American actor. Roy, he played the street preacher in 12 Monkeys. He recognises James Cole, the Bruce Willis's character. But Roy and his wife have created about 80 special days. Roy was working in radio in the late 80s, and he was doing some research for it in this radio station in the central Pennsylvania area. And he was reading a book, Chase's Calendar of Events, which was established in the 50s and includes holidays and special events and federal observances and so on. And he noticed that the book allowed readers to submit their own holidays for inclusion in the next printed copy. So clearly the publishers were like, oh, there will be observances and things that we don't know about, so we need the readers to inform us about this. Roy was surprised to discover that he submitted a holiday and it was published. Not only that, the holiday was picked up by USA Today. That holiday, he suggested, he invented Hoodie Hoo Day, which was a day to shake off winter blues and welcome in the spring. February the 20th. Go out to the house, he says, at noon, raise your hands over your head and yell Hoodie Hoo for all the world to hear. Wear some crazy hats and maybe offer some spring seeds into your garden or go buy a piece of unused furniture. Do something that sort of helps you freshen up your life and feel like you're getting away from winter and new start and all of that, which is quite a nice idea for a holiday. Yeah. So since that success with the initial suggestion, he and his wife have copyrighted 80 different holidays. These include Wonderful Weirdos Day on September the 9th, Haunted Refrigerator Night on October 30th, Panic Day on March the 9th.
Oh God, Barry, it's almost March the 9th.
I know, yeah. We're actually recording this on March the 4th, so yesterday was What If Cats and Dogs Had Opposable Thumbs Day.
I imagine that day leads to Panic Day.
Yeah. January the 2nd, Happy New Year for Cats Day. February 5th, Move Hollywood and Broadway to Lebanon, Pennsylvania Day. March 26th, Make Up Your Own Holiday Day. April 7th, No Housework Day. May 6th, No Homework Day. May 8th, No Socks Day. April 17th, Blah 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 Day.
Okay, this really felt like they were running out of ideas at this point, doesn't it?
Oh, it begins to taper off. June 2nd, Yell Fudge at the Cobras in North America Day. June 27th, Take Your Houseplants for a Walk Day. November the 8th, Cook Something Bold and Pungent Day. And I like this one. We could do this right now. August the 28th, Race Your Mouse Around Your Icons Day on the desktop of your computer. And the day that I think speaks to everybody in the 21st century at the moment, October 12th, International Moment of Frustration Scream Day.
Oh, I'm definitely here for International Primal Scream Day, yeah.
Yeah. So well done, Thomas Roy. So yeah, that's the holiday stuff I found out.
Beautifully done. That ends this month's Third Foot, doing excellent work standing in for a full episode. We will be back very soon indeed. By very soon indeed, I mean in 7 days' time. We've now got some absolutely cracking guests and cracking topics in the diary. We will have World's Worst Astronomer coming soon, World's Worst Sex Position, World's Worst Pub, World's Worst Wizard, World's Worst Librarian, and we're just hoping to nail down some of World's Worst Pop Star as well, because some of those are Patreon requests from you, our noble Patreon supporters.
Also, don't forget that we've got our 250th episode coming up soon, and if you want to submit some of your world's worst failures, either in an email form or with a little audio clip of you passing them on to us, so we can create this community episode we want to do where we'll garner some of your stories of failure and things that you've shared with us, then please get in touch with us on worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, indeed. But for now, you enjoy your Monday morning trudge. I'm going to enjoy laying back on my sun lounger, having my third Cuba Libre of the morning and soaking up the rays. I mean, I love with you. That's not actually what's going to be happening. All I'm going to be doing is parenting in somewhere with a slightly milder climate.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.